जबिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज यशोदानन्दन यमुनातीरा वनचारी यमुनातीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदानन्दन यमुनातीरा अनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे जय राधा गोपीनाथ राधा गोपीनाथ राधे जय राधा बनबिहारी राधा बनबिहारी राधे जय राधा वृंदावन बिहारी राधा वृंदावन बिहारी राधे जय राधा मदन मोहन राधा मदन मोहन राधे जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद नित्य गौर हरि बो हरि बो नित्य गौर हरि बो ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम अज्ञान्तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानो सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वंचकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो राम रामो हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। Very, very grateful and honored to be here sharing something from the Ramayana. Since we are in the Ram Navami week, I've been asked to speak on Ayodhya Kanda, the Ramayana. So I'm going to be sharing some very interesting and a very different perspective on the Ayodhya Kanda. And I'll be sharing some, I'm not going to go sequentially, but sort of randomly on different concepts from the Ayodhya Kanda, the Ramayana. And what I'm going to be speaking is, will help you really broaden your perspective of how you can look at the Ramayana and especially this section of the Ramayana. The Ramayana actually has multiple layers of looking at it. So what I'm going to be sharing today is going to be a very, very interesting way of studying the scripture of the Ramayana. And at the end of today's session, you will really realize that the Ramayana has far-reaching consequences in terms of what the message it can give. Right. So having given that warning, I'll begin. There are two types of diseases in this world. There are physical diseases and mental diseases. So physical diseases cause a lot of discomfort. So do mental diseases. The difference between the two is that in case of physical diseases, the symptoms may differ from person to person. But in case of mental diseases, symptom is same for all. The second difference between a physical disease and a mental disease is that, so in physical diseases, the symptom is known immediately. But in mental diseases, the symptom is not known immediately. You come to know after a long time, you know, somebody has a mental disease. And the most amazing thing is that in physical disease, you are convinced that you are a patient. But when you have a mental disease, you
absolutely have no awareness that you're a patient. You know, that's the most amazing thing. So in the Ramayana, we're going to be analyzing this whole idea of physical diseases and mental diseases, especially mental diseases, from the point of view of Ayodhya Kanda Ramayana. So physical diseases are sometimes contagious and sometimes not. We just went through a whole pandemic, you know, very contagious. But a lot of physical diseases are not contagious at all. If somebody gets malaria, it's not that I'm going to get malaria. You know? But mental diseases are always contagious. So if somebody has a mental disease and you sit with that person who has a mental disease, you will also get it. So the interesting thing about the Ayodhya Kanda Ramayana is that it talks about one such mental disease that spread rampantly across Ayodhya. So we know Ayodhya is a place where no one has any kind of flaws, character flaws, right? Everyone is pure, everyone is perfect. But in Ayodhya, one person was there who had a mental disease, and that was Manthara. Because she was not from Ayodhya, she came from outside. And she was the only person who had a mental disease. But Kaikeyi spent a few hours with her, and the germs of Manthara's mind enter into Kaikeyi. And Kaikeyi also got mental disease. And what is the proof that Kaikeyi had a mental disease? The proof is that she went into Kopa Bhavan. In the palaces of the past, there would be rooms for different things. So if you want to laugh, there'll be one room. If you want to cry, there'll be another room. So Kopa Bhavan is known as sulking chamber. So you go to Kopa Bhavan when you are frustrated, sad, you know, upset, you feel like crying. You go to Kopa Bhavan. So Manthara affected Kaikeyi's mind. Kaikeyi entered into Kopa Bhavan. And Dasharath came to know that Kaikeyi has gone into Kopa Bhavan. So Dasharath went inside with full confidence, overconfidence rather, that I will go and help her. See, when somebody is sick, unless and until you are very sure, unless and until you are a doctor, don't go there. Especially with overconfidence, you don't go. This is like a lot of preachers have this overconfidence that I can preach to anybody. You can't do that. There are some people who you can't meddle around with. So Dasharath went into Kopa Bhavan and he saw Kaikeyi was lying on the floor. Hair was disheveled, clothes were torn, her jewels were thrown here and there. She was in a mess. So when Dasharath entered Kopa Bhavan, he was standing and Kaikeyi was lying down. 15 minutes of association with Kaikeyi, Dasharath was lying down and Kaikeyi was standing. Pura role reversal. So imagine, Dasharath is completely alright when he went in. But in that little association with Kaikeyi, the mental disease of Kaikeyi now entered into Dasharath Maharaj. So when a normal person gets sick, family members get sick, right? One person gets sick, four or five people get sick immediately. But when a leader gets sick, an entire country can get sick. After Dasharath Maharaj got sick, in some time, the entire Ayodhya was crying. Everyone in Ayodhya was affected by the mental disease. Now, imagine the situation. An entire country messed up. If only Dasharath had not gone inside the Kopa Bhavan alone, and instead he had taken his guru with him. Guru, Vasishta, he is the person who can help, you know, deal with mental diseases, right? He's a doctor. But he went on his own, Dasharath Maharaj, with full confidence that I will handle it. And that's what the whole mess happened. Interestingly, when Vasishta came to know that such a thing has happened and the whole of Ayodhya is in a mess, Vasishta was very honest. He said, I can't treat so many people. Even if you're a doctor, you have a capacity how much you can handle, right? Vasishta said, I can't handle so many people sick. So he said, I need someone from outside who is not affected by the mental disease. And that's why Vasishta called Bharat from outside. So Bharat was not in Ayodhya at that point in time. He was in Kaikeyi Desh. So that means he was not affected by this whole mess that was happening in Ayodhya. And when Bharat came in to Ayodhya, and Vasishta explained to him the whole situation, and Bharat saw the whole situation, he came to a very interesting conclusion. He said, I don't have the capacity to cure so many people. The only way we can handle so many of them is take them all to Ram. He took everyone to Chitrakoot. And as soon as people had darshan of Ram, they were completely cured. Their mental disease went away and they were fit and fine. So when Ayodhya was in a mess and everybody was getting sick, two people left Ayodhya, Sita and Ram. God and peace leaves that country. When you have a whole country filled with mentally sick people, basically. So now, if you look at the Ayodhya Kand from this perspective, it is such a different thing, right? So we are, the traditional way of looking at Ayodhya Kand and any of the episodes of the Ramayana is one way. But when we look at this whole Ramayana and all, every episode of the Ramayana from a more analytical way, you realize there is something else only going on. So that's what is called layers of understanding the Ramayana. So the superficial layer of understanding the Ramayana is the storyline. But as you go deeper and deeper and deeper, the number of layers of actually understanding the scripture is fascinating. For the last 8 years or so, I have been just diving deep into all these various layers of the Ramayana, and it's so fascinating. So now, let us look at this Kopabhavan episode a little more deeply and understand something from Mantra and Kaikeyi's perspective and discussions. So, Dasharath went into Kopabhavan, Kaikeyi was quiet. She was not ready to speak in the beginning. And the Acharyas explain that some people speak through their silence. And they chant something repeatedly through their silence. So Kaikeyi, she was silently chanting a mantra. So Dasharath Maharaj was trying to inspire her to speak. But Kaikeyi was chanting a mantra silently. So now, what mantra was Kaikeyi chanting? And who gave her initiation into this mantra, you know? So the mantra that Kaikeyi was chanting was, she was not initiated by Vashishta. She was initiated by Manthara. Who better to give a mantra than Manthara? So interestingly, in the Ramayana, we talk about there are two types of mantras. There is Sumantra and there is Manthara. The difference is the word Su. Su means good. The word Manthara comes from the word Manthan. And Manthan means churning. So Manthara represents intelligence that churns. So Manthara was filled with so much knowledge. She was a very knowledgeable person. And so was Sumantra. Very knowledgeable person. But the difference between Mantra and Sumantra was, Mantra used her knowledge and all the churning to do something unbeneficial to society, creating chaos in society. And Sumantra used, whenever he spoke, he didn't speak much. But whenever he spoke, he would quote a story from the past, and such a story that nobody would know. And then people would get amazed, you know. Like when Kaikeyi was speaking all these crazy things, Sumantra, right in the middle of the whole assembly, he's telling Kaikeyi, she's a queen and he's a minister of the country. He's telling the queen that it's not your fault. What you are speaking and how you are behaving is because you have learned from your mother. And Sumantra tells a story of Kaikeyi's mother that Kaikeyi herself didn't know. Sumantra tells Kaikeyi that your mother, she had a very harsh way of speaking, and a very harsh way of thinking. Ashwapati, who was the father of Kaikeyi, he had a boon according to which he could understand the language of animals. Any animal that spoke, any insect, plant, bird, he could understand. But the only problem was, if he shared what he heard to somebody else, he will die. So one day Ashwapati was eating food and he saw two ants talking to each other. Now when ants talk, it's really funny for human beings, right? What conversation they will have, imagine, you know? So Ashwapati started laughing. And his wife said, why are you laughing? Ashwapati said, I saw these two ants talking. So they said something funny, so I laughed. His wife said, tell me what they said. Because she had a suspicion that he's thinking about some other woman, you know. So Ashwapati said, I can't tell you. If I tell, I'll die. She said, no problem. Die, but tell me and die. Imagine. So Sumantra tells that story over here and tells Dasharath Maharaj, I am telling you, you throw her out of the kingdom. Sumantra is telling Dasharath this. Because Ashwapati actually threw his queen out of the kingdom. So Kaikeyi grew up without her affection of her mother, and she was actually literally raised by Mantra only, in one sense, you know. So Kaikeyi got initiation from Mantra. And what is the initiation? What is the mantra that Mantra gave Kaikeyi? It's a very special guru mantra that Mantra gave. And this mantra was very simple. She kept telling Kaikeyi one thing. Our family is our family. Other people's family is other people's family. Understand what it means? The difference between friend and enemy. So she was, and this is exactly what Bhagavad Gita starts with, right? Mamaka Pandavas Chaiva. The whole mentality is exactly same. My people, your people. So Mantra kept telling Kaikeyi how her father, her son and her life are in danger. So she clubbed the, she hit the three weak points of a woman. The three weak points of a woman are, first, self-respect. Life of father, parents basically, and children. So she convinced her that if she stays in Ayodhya, there is danger to the life of Bharat, there is danger to the life of Ashwapati, there is danger to her own life. That was it. So all of us, in one sense, we chant the same mantra in our own lives, you know. This is our Mahamantra, you know. So the Mahamantra that most people chant is differentiating between what is ours and what is not ours. Family, strangers. Good people, bad people. So this mantra makes sense if you know who is truly ours. And whom we really belong to, right? So for those who understand that in reality, only God is ours. You know, apna and paraya, we speak, right? So the word ours, there's only one person who's actually truly ours. Everybody else is travelers, right? There's nobody really who is actually our family. Yeah? So the moment you understand from this perspective, this mantra changes completely. But because Kaikeyi very heavily focused on the bodily relationship and mantra inspired her to focus on the bodily relationship, she completely lost it. And that mantra took her in a different direction. But in the same Ramayana, we find Sumitra, who is the mother of Lakshman. The way she dealt with this idea of bodily relationship is totally different. When Lakshman came to her saying that, I want to go to the forest with Ram to serve him and Sita, Sumitra encouraged him like anything. She said, from today onwards, I am not your mother. Sita is your mother. She said, from today onwards, Dasharath is not your father. Ram is your father. And she said, from today onwards, Ayodhya is not your kingdom, not your house. The forest is your house. And she said, your life is to serve. So she created an idea of broader family. She created an idea of whom we really belong to, you know. So we can decide that we belong to one family and we become very selfish in only taking care of that. And we become totally disinterested and insensitive towards others. Or we can look at the way Sumitra put it and become broad towards the whole world the moment we accept God as our family, as our only family literally, you know. And that's what the idea of the Ramayana is bringing. So in one Ayodhya Kand itself, you find two mothers. One mother acting like this and another mother acting like this. Totally opposite, right? So now I'm going to look at this same section of the Ramayana of Ram being banished from Ayodhya from Ram's perspective. So now we saw Kaikeyi acting selfish. We saw Mantra's selfishness. Now let us look at it, how Ram looks at this, you know, why he is banished from the kingdom. So if you ask Ram, why were you sent away from the kingdom? Is it because of papa, some sin that you have done? Or is it because of some punya? What this idea of papa and punya is always something that is very tricky to understand, right? So let's analyze this just from this point of view. So when In the beginning, when Ram was told that you have to leave on exile, you know, for 14 years, it obviously comes as a shock, right? Like, if suddenly you lose everything, it's a shock. But when Ram thought about it a little bit, he felt that actually I've done a lot of punya, because of which I'm getting to go to the forest. So when he goes to the forest, before he goes to the forest, he first meets Kaikeyi, and then he meets Kaushalya, his own mother. Right? So he touches the feet of Kaikeyi, and he touches the feet of Kaushalya also. But when he touches the feet of Kaikeyi, after touching her feet, he embraces her. Why does Ram embrace her after touching her feet? But when he touches Kaushalya's feet, he only touches her feet. And she pulls him to embrace her. So it's very interesting, because Kaushalya gave birth to Ram, right? And obviously, he is paying respects to Kaushalya for that. But the difference between Kaushalya and Kaikeyi is something very subtle. According to Ram, Kaikeyi is the one who understood his heart. What is his heart? Everybody felt he should rule the kingdom. Only Kaikeyi felt he should not rule the kingdom. Everybody felt Ram wants to rule the kingdom. Only Kaikeyi understood that Ram doesn't want to rule the kingdom. So her sending Ram away, according to Ram, is actually the best thing she has done. Because from Ram's perspective, it is not about ruling. He didn't want to rule the kingdom at all. He was doing it as a responsibility. So the interesting thing is, when Kaikeyi told him this news, that you have to go to the forest for 14 years, Ram smiled. He smiled because he actually felt grateful to her. All his life, Ram wanted to go to the forest and sit under the feet of the sages and learn from them. And here, 14 years or not 14 years of exile now, is 14 years of learning for Ram now. He's getting 14 years to upgrade his knowledge. So in the Ramayana, we find that, you know, much later also in Ayodhya, much later when Ram begins to rule the kingdom, once in a while Ram would disappear from the kingdom. And nobody would know where he has gone. And invariably, whenever Ram disappears like this from the kingdom, and people would find him in the forest, sitting under the feet of some sage and hearing from him. So Ram has this amazing way of changing, looking at it from a different perspective. Like when eagles, you know, when eagle is flying, sometimes crows attack eagles. These crows are so small and the eagle is so huge, right? If one eagle hits the crow will die instantly. But you'll never find the eagle fighting against crows. The eagle does something simple. It flies higher. It flies so high that the crows can't reach him only. So Ram is like that eagle. Instead of, you know, when he came to know that the whole mess is going on, instead of trying to solve the mess, getting into that muck and trying to solve it, trying to say that, it's my right and this, he didn't get into all that. He just looked at it from a higher perspective. He said, 14 years I'm getting to learn from the sages. What else do I need? He just walked away. And on top of that, he acted grateful to Kaikeyi, thinking that she is the one who facilitated me. So this is actually the result of my punya, that I'm getting to sit under the sages and learn from them. And this is a very interesting way of looking at, you know, the episode of Ram being exiled to the forest. So in the Ramayana, there are three types of personalities. The three queens of Dasharatha Maharaj represent three ways of looking at life. Kaikeyi's way, Sumitra's way, and Kaushalya's way. So I'm going to spend some time analyzing these three ways and looking at it from different perspectives. One is from the perspective of relationships, and second is from the perspective of sadhana and the idea of bhakti, basically. So to make relationships work, you need all the three personalities in your life. You need Kaikeyi, you need Sumitra, you need Kaushalya. So these three types of personalities, when seen together, they make you a complete person. But if one of them only exists in you, you are not complete, you know. So look at the Ramayana, how fascinating it is. Three characters, three queens of Dasharatha Maharaj, on one level, if you look at it, is a story. Yeah, three queens Dasharatha has. But if you look at it from another level, it is three different personality types that you need to have in your life to make relationships complete, to make your life complete, to look at life from different perspectives. So here are what these three personalities represent. The first queen, Kaushalya, she's a thought-oriented person. So she learns to accept every situation that comes into her life by philosophizing, by looking at it using philosophy. So whatever happens in Kaushalya's life, she will think from a higher perspective. She will think from a philosophical perspective. The second queen, Sumitra, she is an emotion-oriented person. So she learns to look at emotional fulfillment as the essence of all relationships. And the third queen, Kaikeyi, she is an action-oriented person. You know. So she has learned to observe minutely people's actions. And by judging their actions, she concludes what the intention is. Like she saw Dasharatha. He made, Ram king, he's going to coronate Ram the next day, but he is not called Bharat for the coronation. He's coronating very quickly. Something wrong in the action. So she analyzes people's actions very deeply. And if she finds a faulty action somewhere, that's it. She understands there's something wrong in the intention. So this is the third way of looking at life. So Kaushalya, she was, as I told you, she looks at everything from a philosophical point of view, right? Dasharatha Maharaj never cared for her much. He was always focused on Kaikeyi only, all the time, right? So Kaushalya, instead of getting upset, saying that, you know, I'm not getting love and affection, she decided to use her time and energy on something higher. You know what she did? Kaushalya ran a Gurukul, where she had 10,000 students. And she arranged everything for them. Education, boarding, food, everything for them. And she devoted her entire energy there. Instead of crying and lamenting, saying that, "Arey, what is this? Everything is going wrong in my life and all that." She looked at it from a different perspective. And she put her energy in that direction, basically. So, when Ram left Ayodhya, Ram didn't meet Sumitra. He met Kaushalya. But he didn't meet Sumitra at all. So technically, you know, if there are three mothers, and if you don't meet one mother, you meet the other two mothers, the third one should get upset, right? But Sumitra doesn't get upset with Ram. Why? Because she is an emotion-oriented person. She looks at relationships from the point of view of emotional fulfillment. She doesn't look at action so much. She doesn't look at action so much like Kaikeyi. Imagine if this happened with Kaikeyi, what she would have done? She would have analyzed Ram so badly, saying that he didn't come and meet me. But Sumitra, like people, don't look at actions. They look at intentions. So, because Ram had so much love for her and so much respect for her all life long, that emotional fulfillment helped Sumitra remain unaffected when Ram didn't come to meet her. In fact, it didn't impact her relationship with Ram. Whereas, because Mantra pointed out to Kaikeyi that wrong action of Dasharatha, she completely focused only on that aspect. She completely forgot all the love, so many years they had together. She forgot all the favors that Dasharatha had done on her. All that gone. One wrong action, that's all that mattered for Kaikeyi. So for Kaikeyi type of people, what people do is important. Their behavior towards them is important. For Sumitra type of people, what people mean to do is important. What they say is important. Behavior doesn't affect her, but the intentions affect her. When Sumitra had clarity that Ram has right intentions, he doesn't get affected by his wrong behavior. And Kaushalya type of people, neither what people do affects her, nor what people say affects her, what she thinks affects her. So she is a thought-oriented person, right? So she chooses to focus on that thing that gives her satisfaction. Kaikeyi type of people are like road rollers. You know, when a road roller moves, what happens? Anybody who's on the way gets crushed. Road roller just goes on. Action. You know, that's what is important for Kaikai type of people, basically. Sumitra type of people are like ants. You know, when ant walks, if somebody comes on the path of the ant, what the ant does? Ant doesn't crush the person and go. Ant moves around and goes, right? Sumitra type of people know how to move around and go ahead in life. And Kaushalya type of people are like the eagle. They fly higher and look at it from a higher perspective, basically. So, this way, so now all the three are important. All the three are important for us in our own lives, basically. So, like Kaikai, should we see wrong behavior and judge a person? What should be our way of looking at things, basically? So, Kaushalya teaches us how to deal with surprises in life. So, not everything goes in according to our plan. Even relationships don't go according to our plan. So, even if we do everything right, there will always be some people who don't reciprocate with us in the right way. And therefore, we have to train our intelligence to accept the realities by looking at it from a different perspective. Kaikai type of people focus on projects. Sumitra type of people focus on relationships. And Kaushalya type of people focus on themselves. You need all three in your life. Sometimes we need to be like Kaikai, focusing on projects. Sometimes you need to be like Sumitra, focusing on relationships. And sometimes you need to be like Kaushalya, especially when things go wrong in your life. You know, so all the three types of personalities we need to integrate in our own lives. And that becomes wholesome and becomes very beautiful. Now I'm going to analyze these three queens from a more devotional angle. Okay, so we analyzed it a little bit from a relationship angle. Now let us look at it from a devotional angle. Dasharath represents the Vedas. And the three queens, so the goal of the Vedas is to reach God, right? The goal of the Vedas is to reach Lord Ram. The three queens, the three wives, represent the paths that are mentioned in the Vedas. The three paths. The Jnana Marg, the Karma Marg, and the Bhakti Marg. So Kaushalya represents the Jnana Marg. Sumitra represents the Bhakti Marg. And Kaikai represents the Kriya. Karma Marg, basically. One, a human being can be considered healthy when all the three aspects are integrated in him. It's not that Jnana is more important and Bhakti is more important Karma is more important. All the three are important. And all of them have a relevance in our lives, basically. It's like a human body which has a head, a heart and hands, right? Legs. So hands and legs represents Kriya, action. The intelligence represents Jnana. And the heart represents Bhakti, devotion. Now which is more important? Is brain more important, heart more important, or hands more important? You know, all the three are important. What is a body without a brain? What is a body without a heart? Useless. And what is a body with brain but no heart? Useless. And what is a body which brain is very active, you know, but heart is dead? Useless, right? So all the three are as important as each other. And when a healthy person is a combination of these three. So looking at it internally, Kriya Yoga is the body, the physical body that we have. Bhakti Yoga is the heart. And Jnana Yoga is the brain. So a person who has a balance of all these three, that person acts very well in this world. So out of the three queens, Kaushalya is Jnanamayi, Sumitra is Bhavamayi or Bhaktimayi, and Kaikai is Kriyamayi. So if you look at it from this perspective, you know, it's very interesting. When Hanumanji comes to, during the war, at one point Lakshman collapses and Hanuman has gone to get the mountain, right? So in between Bharat, you know, he brings Hanumanji down. And then Bharat comes to know that Lakshman is dying, you know. So Bharat tells Hanumanji, you go and please tell Sumitra this news. And I've given enough bad news to people in Ayodhya, I can't give more bad news. So Hanumanji goes and tells Sumitra that Lakshman is on the verge of dying. And Sumitra tells him something amazing. Sumitra tells him, if one son dies, Lakshman dies, no problem, take my second son with you. service to Ram should not stop. She tells him, take Shatrughan with you. But Kaushalya, when she comes to know that Lakshman is dying, she tells something amazing, very different. She tells him, tell Ram, if Lakshman is dying, Ram's name without Lakshman's name doesn't look good. You know? Ram Lakshman looks good. But only Ram doesn't look good. She tells him, tell Ram, if Lakshman is dying, you also don't come back. She tells him like that. She tells him that the idea of Ram without Lakshman, it doesn't appeal to me. So look at Kaushalya's way of thinking, you know. So it's like a very elevated consciousness, elevated way of looking at it, you know. Sumitra is a more heartfelt way. She wants to serve, she wants to help. Imagine a mother who has created two sons, given birth to two sons, and both of them are servants. And she's encouraging them to become servants. One servant of God, one servant of a devotee. What an amazing mother, isn't it? So, so this is the combination that really is needed. The combination of bhakti, of jnana and kriya. And this combination together is very beautiful. It makes it very, very, it makes devotion, it makes the perspectives of looking at Ramayana very, very beautiful. So Sumitra, so Kaikeyi is a little complicated than Kaushalya and Sumitra. You know, Kaushalya is very clear, you know, Gyanamayi, very lofty thoughts. Everything she says, it makes solid sense, you know, and it impresses us. Sumitra also is very clear because everything she does impresses us, you know, because she is a heartfelt person, very emotional, very devotional person. But Kaikeyi is a little confusing, you know, because Kaikeyi is Kriyamayi. Sumitra and Kaushalya are surrendered to God. So Jnana allows you to surrender easily. And Bhakti allows you to surrender very easily. Both Sumitra and Kaushalya are Vandaniya. Vandaniya means we can take shelter of them. We are oriented towards taking shelter of them. But Kaikeyi, because she's Kriyamayi, she is both Vandaniya and Nindaniya. When Kaikeyi starts using her intelligence, she tends to become Nindaniya. That means she tends to do things, actions. You know, she is action oriented, right? So sometimes when your actions are selfishly oriented, those actions become condemned. But the moment Kaikeyi becomes the mother of Bharat, she becomes Vandaniya. So the same Kriya, when it is connected with Bharat, so when you call Kaikeyi as Ashwapati's daughter, she's different. When you call Kaikeyi as Bharat's mother, she's different, right? So action, Kriya, can be good and can be bad, according to what your intention is. So because Kaikeyi, when she was acting selfish, from her own perspective, she became Nindaniya. I mean, one of the most criticized people in Ayodhya, right? Everyone in Ayodhya was criticizing, including her own son. Imagine the amount of criticism that she got because of her wrong actions. Her actions that were selfishly oriented. But the moment that same Kaikeyi becomes Bharat's mother, Ram worships her. She becomes Vandaniya. So in our own lives also, this word, this Kriya is where the confusion is. So in Jnana, there is no confusion. Because when you hear Bhagavatam class, perfect. When people give Bhagavatam class, perfect. When people are doing bhakti, chanting, dancing, perfect. But the moment you get into action, seva, that's when problems come. So you will never find a fault in a devotee when he's chanting and dancing. When he's singing, when he's, you know, doing, you know, very bhakti-oriented things. And you'll never find a fault in a devotee when he's giving classes. Because there's a lot of philosophy, there's a lot of processing, there's a lot of higher, lofty principles we speak. But the moment the devotee gets into service, that is when all the problems start coming. So all the bad relationships, all the problems, all the fights, all the differences are in the Kriya part. So either you can become Nindaniya or you can become Vandaniya, depending on how your actions are and what is that intention behind your actions. Interestingly, If you look at this whole, you know, episode from the point of view of Kaikeyi, from a Kriya point of view, you know, it's very interesting, you know. So, Kriya means doing, right? Actions, doing something, right? So, we all want to do actions. And whenever we do any action, one of the things that we expect is fruit. What do I get from it? I'm doing something, but what do I get from it? In jnana, there is no fruit, right? You gain knowledge, you hear, you read, you absorb, you gain a lot of wisdom. There's no fruit connected to it. When you do devotion, it's love. There's no fruit connected to it. We don't do devotion because we want something back from the Lord. We do it because we love the Lord. But when we do action, there is a fruit connected to it, usually. Whenever we do Kriya, there's always a fruit connected to it. So Kaikeyi, when Dasharatha wanted to marry her, the first thing she and her father asked is, what we'll get in return? We'll marry, but what we get in return? They took an oath from Dasharatha that the son of Kaikeyi will become the next king. Understand? So there is an element of fruit connected to it. There's an element of getting back something connected to it. That's the problem with Kriya. That's the problem with, you know, actions. Kriya always wants fruits. So when we do something good, any good action, it always tends to lead towards pride. So when we do any good action, it tends to lead towards some kind of pride. So Kaushalya and Sumitra, they were internally very beautiful. And therefore, you do not find in the entire Ramayana a description of their external beauty. When it comes to Kaikeyi, there is a description of external beauty, right? But when it comes to Sumitra and Kaushalya, there is no description of external beauty because they are internally beautiful. Kaikeyi, she sends Ram away. One of the reasons she sends Ram away was because pride entered her heart. So a proud person feels very happy when he is told, or he or she is told, you are intelligent. And the problem with intelligence is that intelligence tends to think too much about oneself, usually. Planning for your own benefit, your own good. So Kaikeyi was doing so much planning. She was using her intelligence. And that intelligence gets connected with pride. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find something similar. Kamsa is a very proud person, right? And Devaki is a very intelligent person, Buddhi. So there is a lot of connection between Buddhi and pride. There is a very intimate connection between Buddhi and pride. Wherever there is Buddhi, there comes to, they usually becomes an element of pride also comes in. So a proud person, he feels that I can solve a lot of my problems. So Dasharatha Maharaj, when he married Kaikeyi, so Kaikeyi, you know, she had a lot of intelligence in her head, you know, and using her intelligence, she was planning a lot of action in her life, you know. And when she planned action using her intelligence, it attracted pride. She felt, I have the perfect plan. I have made the perfect plan to get the kingdom for my son and secure my life and my father's life. And that pride takes Ram away from your life. Ram walks away from the life of Kaikeyi and the entire Ayodhya, literally, you know. So the entire episode of the Ayodhya Kand can be analyzed in this way and looking at every small aspect. I mean, I'm just taking a few little snippets from the Ayodhya Kand and helping you understand it from a deeper perspective, you know. And the same story, the same little episode can be analyzed from so many angles. Now let me tell you something very sweet. I've done enough analysis. I think I've, you know, wrecked your brain too much. Now I'll get into something very sweet and very beautiful from the Ayodhya Kand of Ramayana. So when Kaikeyi and Dasharatha decide that Ram is going to, not going to be the king, they call Ram to meet them, right? just this whole section of Ram, I'm going a little before this section, you know, where Dasharatha Maharaj decides to coronate Ram as a king. So when Dasharatha decides, I'm going to make Ram the king, he wants to know from everyone whether they also want this to happen. So he called all the citizens of Ayodhya, thousands of them, the most important, most prominent citizens of Ayodhya were all there. And Dasharatha Maharaj asked them, told them that I think that I want to make Ram the king of Ayodhya. What do you all think about it? What do you think about this idea? Dasharatha never expected what happened next. Everyone together, loudly, they said, Ichhamam, Raghuviram, Mahabahum. They said, we want Mahabahu Raghuvir to be the next king. And one person said, you please get down now only and make Ram king now only. So Dasharatha became a little insecure. He started thinking, "Array, I've ruled these guys for 60,000 years. I've done so much for them. And now the moment, you know, I'm telling them somebody else, they are like pouncing on me. So am I so bad?" So Dasharatha started feeling like that. Am I so bad? So then Dasharatha asked them, "Can you please tell me why you are so convinced that Ram should be the king?" And when the citizens of Ayodhya saw Dasharatha's, you know, little hesitance, he felt a little bad. One citizen said, "See, it is not your fault. It's not your fault that we're telling you step down and make Ram king. But the problem is Ram is so good. The moment we think of him, we can't think of anybody else as a king." And the citizens of Ayodhya say that we are like a cow that has given birth to two calves. And the cow is confused which calf to give more love. So when Dasharatha hears, you know, the citizens of Ayodhya are saying, we want you also, but we want Ram also, you know. So when Dasharatha heard this, he felt a little good. But he wanted to know from them, is this flattery or is this genuine appreciation of Ram, you know. So sometimes not just to make somebody happy, we, you know, say big things about that person, right. We don't really mean it. The difference between flattery and appreciation is, in flattery, you will not be able to give deeper insights when you're flattering someone. If somebody, like, typically, Maharaj many times, you know, go and tell him that, Maharaj, your class was amazing, you know. The next thing he asks is, what did you like in it? That's when you get stumped, you know. Sometimes you didn't hear properly also and you go and tell him that your class is amazing. Immediately he says, what did you like? And then you have to be really prepared before saying that, you know. So, this is the difference between flattery and appreciation. When you appreciate, you will be able to actually give good reasons. So Dasharatha asked them, why you want Ram to be the king? And then the citizens of Ayodhya went on speaking about the qualities of Lord Ram. And what they spoke is so amazing. So if you study this section of the Ayodhya Kanda of the Ramayana, it's just fascinating how the citizens of Ayodhya are bringing out qualities of Ram that make him an ideal leader. So when I analyzed it, when I studied it, I realized that whatever the citizens of Ayodhya spoke falls in three categories. Three things the citizens of Ayodhya saw in Ram that make him the ideal king. And that's what is actually needed in anyone who wants to be a good leader in this world. So if you want to do something good for the world, and if you want people to really appreciate you and understand you and really connect with you on a deeper level, these are three things that every leader should have. So the citizens of Ayodhya, they tell Dasharatha Maharaj that Ram has a combination of three things: talent, good attitude, and character. For anyone to really excel in life, you have to have all these three things. Talent helps you reach the bridge of success. Good attitude helps you cross the bridge of success. And character helps you retain success. And the citizens of Ayodhya explain how Ram is good in all the three in detail. So the citizens of Ayodhya, as they say, they speak about Ram's talent. So they say Ram's talent is like a sword. A sword is not to be merely admired. You have to use it also. You have to know how to use it also. So Ram's talent is not just for show. You know, you put it on the wall, hang the sword on the wall. It's actually something that he knows how to use. So they say, just like, Ram's quiver is equipped with so many arrows. Similarly, Ram has so many talents in him. And they speak about some very beautiful talents that Ram has. They say, Ram not only knows the Vedas by heart, but he also knows how to apply them. Knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom is application of knowledge. So somebody may be very good in theory. You know, you may not know all the verses of the Gita, all the verses of the Bhagavatam. But if you don't know when to use the verse, or use a verse in the wrong place, that's absolutely wrong. Then they say that Ram, he is skillful in the use of all weapons, but he doesn't use weapons to show off. His use of weapons is actually his care for people. That means, I mean, usually weapons are used for destroying, right? But Ram uses his weapons to protect, not destroy. And then they say that Ram is excellent in singing. But when Ram sings his melodies, it awakens love in the heart. It brings hope in people's life. Ram is amazing in speaking. He is an excellent orator. The citizens of Ayodhya say that. And they say that his oration is not just a long winding discourse, but it is like drops of nectar. Eloquent drops of nectar. Like one guy, he was giving he went to some auditorium to give a lecture, you know. And he prepared a lot, really nicely. Nobody was in the auditorium. One fellow was there, you know, sitting there. And he was a farmer who was sitting there. So this man didn't know whether he should give the lecture or no, you know. So he asked the farmer only. He asked the audience, "Do you think I should give the lecture? I mean, nobody is there, only you are there, you know." He said, "I am a farmer, I don't know anything. But I know only one thing. If I have 100 horses, and if all the 99 horses run away, I will still feed the one horse that is left, you know." So this fellow gave a full heavy dose lecture to this guy. 2-3 hours lecture he gave, you know. And after giving the 2-3 hours lecture, he asked him, "Did you like it?" This fellow said, "I am a farmer. I don't understand all these things. But I know one thing. If there are only one horse over there, I will not feed the amount of grass that I have got for 100 horses to that one fellow." You know? So it's not just about speaking. It's about you should know what the audience is and how much the capacity of the audience will handle also. So citizens of Ayodhya were speaking about Ram's oration in this way, you know. And then they say he has such a grasp of public administration. So he has a balance between rewarding and punishing. Rewarding the virtuous and punishing the wicked. And he avoids being excess in both. That means he doesn't give too much reward also, and he doesn't give too much punishment also. He stays in between in balance. So the citizens of Ayodhya speak about Ram's talent, and then they speak about Ram's attitude. Attitude, so talent without attitude, without the right attitude, is like sweet rice without sugar. Yeah. I mean, when I usually start my lectures in the IIMs, you know, usually the first lecture, almost the first sentence I tell them is this. I tell them, talent is one of the most useless things you can have in life. These are people that are like super talented, you know. And their mouths are like dropping because they have always been told talent is everything. They can solve all problems with talent, you know. And I'm starting my lecture by telling talent is the most useless thing you can have in life. Then I tell them, you'll always come across some problems in life that talent cannot solve. Whenever you come across problems in life that talent cannot solve and all you have is talent, that's when you start having problems. That's exactly what happens. Many of these people who reach very high levels of positions in the corporate world and they are super talented, but when you come across relationship issues, talent cannot solve it. You cannot be so talented to solve relationship issues, right? You need good attitude for that. And that's why so many of them are very successful but lonely. Some of the most talented people are also some of the most loneliest people in the world. And that's why the citizens of Ayodhya, they speak about not only Ram's talent, but they speak about Ram's good attitude. And then they give a description, a list of Ram's good attitudes. I mean, this is fascinating. I mean, look at the intelligence of these people to observe in Ram the good qualities. And look at the attitude that they're talking about. So they say The symptom of the disease of vanity, when you're proud, you know, the symptom of the disease of vanity is that you want others to approach you. You don't approach first. But the citizens of Ayodhya say that Ram, he first goes and talks to a person. He doesn't wait for that person to come and talk to him. What a subtle thing, isn't it? I mean, you look at it from our own perspectives, right? I'm sure all of us have had situations like where, you know, you want to go and talk to someone, but you're waiting for that person to come to you, you know? And we don't end up going ahead. And Ram is such an amazing person. He's such a, he's a prince of a country. But he goes and initiates discussions. The citizens of Ayodhya say, this shows his attitude. And then the citizens of Ayodhya, they say, because Ram is able to do that because he's humble, you know. Then they say that a lot of people who are very talented also become self-reliant, you know. Self-reliant means they think they know everything. They think that I don't need anybody to teach me anything. So sometimes knowledge, sometimes a lot of knowledge does that to you. You tend to become very proud and impudent, basically. Ram, he gains knowledge with submissive inquiry from three sources. The citizens of Ayodhya say this. So Ram submissively inquires from three sources. So those who are vayovriddha, those who are wealthy in age, they have the wealth of age. He goes and approaches those who are jnanavriddha, who have the wealth of knowledge. And he goes to those people who are shilavriddha, who have the wealth of character. So he goes and approaches three sources of knowledge. Those who are experienced, those who are wise, and those who are cultured. And it's amazing. You get different knowledge from these different sources. From people who are wise, you'll get a different type of knowledge. From those who are experienced, you get a different type of knowledge. And those who are cultured, you get a different type of knowledge. And Ram gathers knowledge from all these three sources, they say. And then the citizens of Ayodhya, they say that when somebody is insensitive, you know, there's a disease of insensitivity, there is extreme self-concern and indifference towards others. So when somebody is very insensitive, this is what happens, right? You're selfish, you're not bothered about others. But the citizens of Ayodhya, they say that Ram is not touched by this disease because he has empathy in his heart. And they describe Ram's empathy with an example. You know what they say? They say, whenever we go through happy situations in our life, when we succeed in something, when we're happy about something, when, you know, somebody's birthday, somebody's child is born, if it's any happy occasion in our life, they say Ram comes to us and he's happier than our family members. And when we go through sad situations in our life, Ram comes to our house and he cries along with our family members. They say, this is so amazing. You know, two situations in people's lives when they are most vulnerable. When they are happy and when they are sad. In these two situations, whoever is available to that person, that person really connects to that heartfelt. Whenever citizens of Ayodhya are going through happy situations and sad situations, Ram is there with them. And he's happier than their family members, sadder than their family members. The interesting thing here is that the citizens of Ayodhya don't say Ram comes and solves our problems. This is what fascinated me. Ram is God, right? He's a prince. But the citizens don't say he comes and solves our problems when we are sad. They say he comes and cries with us. Which means people don't expect you to solve their problems. They expect you to understand their problems. That's all. And people like Ram don't go and, you know, go run around solving everybody's problem. Because not everybody's problem can be solved. Most problems have to be tolerated. And many problems have to be neglected. But what helps when you come across problems is somebody who can stand by you and understand you. That's all. So Ram goes and cries along with them. But okay, that's it. The citizens are so happy that he's with us. So Ram, so these are the different ways in which, you know, they speak about Ram's attitude. And then they say one more amazing thing about Ram's attitude. They say Ram is so grateful that if anybody does anything good for him, even if it is small, he always remembers it. And if anybody does anything bad to him, he forgets it immediately. They say we're so fascinated by this. One small thing we have done for him, he remembers it for years together. So these are things that, you know, the citizens of Ayodhya speak about Ram's attitude. So we spoke about talent, we spoke about attitude, and now we're speaking about Ram's character. So the citizens of Ayodhya, they speak about how character is a tripod, is like a tripod. There are three things that make one's character spotless: self-control, honesty, and integrity. So they speak about what is the idea of, you know, these three things. You know, the citizens of Ayodhya, they say that an ordinary human being, when he is put under pressure of self-control, he transforms. Just like coal, where it is put under heavy pressure, it transforms into a diamond. So self-control, in one sense, is like putting pressure on ourselves, right? Abstain from this, abstain from that. There's a lot of pressure. But the citizens speak about how self-control helps you transform. So the first thing they speak about Ram's character is very self-controlled person. The second thing they speak about Ram's character is the idea of honesty and the idea of integrity, right? So like, say for example, most people in this world, they have two sets of values, one for themselves and one they show the world. It's like an elephant, you know, the two sets of teeth. That big teeth, tusk, is not useful only. You can't bite anything with it, right? And that small teeth that is inside is so small, basically. So a lot of people outside, they are something else, and they inside something else. But the citizens of Ayodhya, they speak about how Ram's life is like an open book. Whatever he tells, he does. Whatever he speaks, he practices himself, you know? And then they spoke about Ram's truthfulness in a very interesting way. They describe two things in Ram's truthfulness, in Ram's honesty. They say Ram's honesty is like a cuckoo bird singing sweetly. What is the two things in a cuckoo bird singing sweetly? Two things are very consistent. It is pleasant and it is constant. These two things are about Ram's honesty. It's pleasant and it's constant. He is not once in a while truthful, you know, not once in a while honest, constantly honest. And his honesty is not hurting somebody else. Now I'm going to tell you a story about Ram telling a lie. I'm sure all of you have always spoken about, heard about Ram being Maryada Purushottam, never speaks a lie. Here is a story of Ram speaking a lie. When Ram was leaving Ayodhya, you know, and he was on the chariot, Ram, Lakshman, Sita, chariot, and Sumantra was driving the chariot, Dashrath Maharaj comes running from behind. And the thousands of people there, you know, it's a chaos. Everybody's crying, everybody's sad. It's a total mess. And when the citizens of Ayodhya were all around, Dashrath Maharaj comes running down. He shouts out to Sumantra. He tells Sumantra, stop the chariot, stop the chariot. Ram tells Sumantra, take the chariot fast, go ahead fast. Sumantra is confused. Should I listen to the king? Should I listen to the prince? Sometimes, you know, two people give equivocal instructions. So Sumantra is confused, and Ram understands Sumantra is confused. Ram tells Sumantra, drive fast. When you come back, when Dashrath asks you, why didn't you stop? Why didn't you obey my instruction? Tell him, there was too much noise, I didn't hear you. Imagine, Ram is telling Sumantra to tell a lie. The question is, what is truth? This episode really brings us the idea of what truth is. Truth has to always cause greater good. Truth that causes greater pain is actually worse than a lie. So Dashrath is in pain, right? He's running behind. He's in so much pain and agony. And Ram understands, as long as I'm here, as long as Dashrath is looking at me, his pain is not going to decrease. His pain is going to be as intense. So Ram is encouraging Sumantra to tell a lie. Why? So that lie can help Dashrath deal with his pain. That's why the Siddhas of Ayodhya are speaking about Ram's honesty being pleasant and constant. Love, a lot of us, we understand we want to be honest, but how much hurt we cause people by being honest, isn't it? I mean, frank and blunt. We think we're honest, but we're actually damaging people's hearts. We're causing so much pain in people's hearts. That's not what honesty is supposed to lead to. And that's the way in which the citizens of Ayodhya are describing. So when Dashrath heard this, he said, wow. He was amazed. He didn't know so many good qualities of his son that the citizens of Ayodhya are telling him, you know. So I was just thinking, just look at this one section of the Ramayana, you know, from the Ayodhya Kand. If just this one section we can meditate on and just imbibe everything that is being spoken about here by the citizens of Ayodhya about Ram's qualities, so much of our life would be better, isn't it? I mean, we would be such better human beings and such better devotees and such better sadhakas, literally, you know. So, this is the way I've been studying the Ramayana. And I'll end by telling one sweet incident that happens while Ram is leaving Ayodhya. Pardon? Integrity, I spoke about the elephant tusk, right? We should have the same inside and outside. So you can't have one set of rules for others and one set for yourself. You have to have, you know, equality in both. Ram's life is like an open book, you know. Everyone can see everything, basically, like that. So when Ram, Lakshman and Sumantra were walking away from Ayodhya, they were on the chariot driving away from Ayodhya, thousands of citizens come and stop Ram's chariot from going ahead. They just don't allow the chariot to move ahead. Everyone. So the description that is there in the Valmiki Ramayana is just so beautiful. It talks about how all of the citizens of Ayodhya were like dead people. They were like paintings. You know? Paintings. In a painting, what happens? Painting is stationary, right? Static. You don't find any action in paintings. But in this painting, everybody was frozen, but tears were rolling down constantly. Constantly tears were rolling down. And here, the citizens of Ayodhya were like a sea of tears. They were like almost an ocean of tears. And Ram is standing on a boat. He's standing on the boat. And he's standing on the boat and looking at the ocean of tears. The same Ram was Matsya Avatar at some point in the past, right? And as Matsya, he helped cross an ocean. But here, as Ram, he has drowned them in an ocean. And he's standing on a boat himself. Matsya put everybody on a boat. And he was, you know, taking the boat along, right? But here in this incarnation, Ram is standing on the boat. And he's put everybody in the ocean. And they're all crying so much. And the citizens of Ayodhya was just not able to take it. They were telling Ram, you know, don't go, don't go. And Ram was doing something amazing. Ram tells them, so usually what happens is, Ram plays two roles in the Ramayana. On one level, he's playing the role of a son, ideal son, ideal, you know, a prince. So there is a vatsalya bhav that the citizens have towards Ram, right? That means they feel they are older, they need to protect him. But the same Ram does another role of being a father. So in this particular scene, Ram is acting like the father of all these citizens. You know, he's standing on a higher platform in terms of the chariot also, but in terms of thoughts also. So Ram is going to tell the citizens how they need to think in the next 14 years. So Ram tells the citizens of Ayodhya that for the next 14 years, if you love me, your love for me will be seen in the way you treat Bharat. If you actually love me, you should be able to actually show that same amount of love for Bharat that you have shown me. And then Ram begins to glorify Bharat. Ram says, Bharat is one of the most amazing kings that can be. And Ram speaks about Bharat's so many good qualities. And as Ram is glorifying Bharat, the citizens of Ayodhya, their love for Ram is growing. This is an amazing thing, you know. When you appreciate somebody else, people begin to love you more. When you appreciate yourself, people begin to hate you. Right? When you praise yourself, people don't like you actually. But the moment you start appreciating somebody else, people will love you even more. Isn't it? So Ram is praising Bharat more and more. The citizens are falling in love with Ram more and more. So Ram finally understands, you know, I can't, you know, convince them. So he tells Sumantra, let's go. And Sumantra's chariot starts moving. And as Sumantra's chariot starts moving, there are some very elderly Brahmanas who are also walking along. You know, but thousands of people are walking. And these elderly Brahmanas, they are not able to walk. They're very fragile, you know. They're not like very healthy. They're not able to walk along, you know. So the Brahmanas, they're trying to catch up with the chariot. But they're not able to catch up with the chariot. Obviously, chariot is moving faster, right? So the Brahmanas start shouting, calling out. They don't call out to Ram. They don't call out to Lakshman. They don't even call out to Sita. They don't call out to Sumantra also. They're calling out to the horses. They're telling the horses, stop. They're shouting and telling, please, horses, stop. When Ram sees that these old Brahmanas are struggling so much, he gets off his chariot and he starts walking out of Ayodhya so that they can keep pace with him. And look at his sensitivity, you know. He's looking at somebody struggling there and he gets off from his chariot and he walks along with them. And that's how Ram exits from Ayodhya. So it is explained that one ancestor of Ram, Bhagirath, you know, he got the Ganga from the heavens, right? Bhagirath was moving ahead, Ganga was flowing behind him. And Ram, the same descendant of Bhagirath Maharaj, he is walking out of Ayodhya and there's a whole, you know, river of Ayodhya's citizens walking along with him, you know. So the acharyas explain that this is exactly like Bhagirath Maharaj taking all the whole river Ganga along with him, you know. And interestingly, this river Ganga moves and stops at a river that is in the vicinity. There's a Tamasa river that's in the borders of Ayodhya, the Koshal province, you know. The border of the city of Ayodhya is covered by Tamasa river. So Ram goes along with the citizens. There's one river coming behind him. There's another river perpendicular. And at that junction of the two of these two rivers, Ram stops for that night. And that whole night, Ram sits and hears from the sages some beautiful things. And then that particular night, they go to sleep on the banks of the river Tamasa. And of course, Nayodhya Kanada Ramayana goes on and on. But I'll stop here. We can have some discussions and questions if there are any. Hare Krishna. Hope I didn't create too many bouncers for y'all. And hope it was not an over analysis. Yes, bro. Oh, there is no description of Kaikeyi is meeting Hanumanji. At least I have not come across so far. Right, yeah. Yes, bro. No, I didn't say that. I said usually problems happen when we are serving together. Yeah. So, if I'm just trying to understand the question, you're saying that when we do service, there are issues, but when we do bhakti and gyan, usually there are not much issues. Yeah. But if you don't do that nicely, how will you do service nicely? That's what you're talking about? Huh. Correct. Perfect. So that's the point. So when we serve with the right mood, the right consciousness, which comes through good sadhana and through knowledge. So when we have the right knowledge, that right knowledge helps us get higher perspectives of how to serve. And when we chant nicely, when we purify our hearts through sadhana, that actually gives us the right, right consciousness to be able to serve nicely. So it's a combination, circle. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, correct. So that is, yeah. So in the ideal understanding of Gyan Yoga, the liberation is the goal for the Gyanis. But I am talking within the perspective of Bhakti only. So, the whole discussion that I did is in the perspective of Bhakti, because as Bhakti Yogis, we also do Gyan Yoga. We also do, Kriya Yoga. We also do Bhakti Yoga, right? So from that perspective, I was talking about, within that circle of Bhakti only I was talking about. Anything else? Any other questions or comments? Jai, thank you very much. Very, very grateful to you all for allowing me to serve through sharing thoughts from the Ramayana. And hopefully we'll discuss more sometime in future. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Ram Navami Maha Mahotsav Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki.